2009 compared to 2008 is a real witch of a year to try to figure out. And I know because when I was in Bloomington in January, I saw her getting off the plane. I don't have time to do any real advertising, although Dave said I could take a little time. I'm going to give you this. You paid, what, $16 to be here today? I'm giving you $20 off of anything I've got, and that includes existing customers. One coupon per attendee. It's in your handout in the blue bag. Also, we're working on a free report that'll be out yet in March. It'll, in writing, cover a lot of what we have. Please, if you, that's by request only. And that one, notice down there, if you sign up for it, it's by mail and email. Please let us know which way you want to go. And then, how many of you have been to any of my workshops in the past, in recent months? Quite a few of you. They can tell you that I can't tell you in 50 minutes what it's going to, I can't do it in 4 hours, what I've got to say. So we're holding two more Outlook meetings in this area, and I don't even have an opening this summer unless things change, and they usually change. But we have two more Outlook meetings coming up again, and that's in your handout. That's it for the advertising. Here's where we were a year ago. This was the day of the meeting. That break in gold is what told me that we were at the end or the beginning of the end of the inflationary expansion. That I am a student of market behavior, and whatever tool I can find that helps me, I use. This is how it turned out, and it indeed was the beginning of the end. Later on, I'll show you that I fear that we've topped gold again for the year. Now, I'm actually optimistic for a handful of weeks, and I am very bullish put options long term. All right, here's where we were in soybeans. The arrows on the left was where we were at, and that's where the how the market, that was beginning the end. That is a very typical topping process, folks. And I often write in the newsletter, those of you who get the newsletter, you'll see me especially talk about bottoming processes because most markets don't bottom overnight. Well, this is also a topping process. And that's how you put it on a weekly chart, put it in perspective. And now, under a perfect world, we'll get a chance to bounce and resell it. Of course, we've known that the last year in the economy has been a perfect world, right? This is where wheat was at the meeting. This is where corn was, and I actually put this presentation together last night. I've been doing it in my head, but I actually put it together last night, and I thought, well, it didn't do very well on corn until I actually put up the range of the cycle rise, and there's the top third. So we caught the bottom of the top third in terms of attitude last year. I also showed you last year that gold is a lead indicator. Gold does not lead the grains. Gold is a lead indicator. It doesn't literally lead the grains, but it is a lead indicator. This is where we were last year. This is what's happened since. And this is a great example in the past year. The severity of the decline in corn, which is the blue line, the severity of the decline in corn is an indication of how gold is a leader of direction, not in terms of size of movement. If gold's going down, the grains get ready to come down. They don't have to come down right away. If gold's going up, the grains get ready to go up. And that's what's scary about this winter. We've had a rally in the gold, and we didn't have much lift. In fact, I want to show you a different picture here for a moment. I want to look through a few charts. Just quick observation. Starting here, just notice a handful of these charts and notice. I can't even tell you what markets these are, but do I need to? Can you see that we're virtually been all marching to the same beat, more or less? Some a little weaker, some a little stronger, but they've all been following the same thing. We have been gripped by one thing. That's a deflationary spiral that has begun. And if history holds true, it has only just begun. Now, I am bullish agriculture relative to the rest. No, and I mean that seriously. Now, that's bad news if the stock market goes down 90% and you go down 80%, that you've done relatively better, right? However, one of the best historical stores of wealth is paid for farmland. I'm not saying it's going to hold in terms of dollars, but it's paid for farmland. Put it this way, if you paid like they did in Iowa, $10,000 an acre for some land, and it falls to $5,000, but if you can sell that, if it takes half as many acres to buy a new pickup to sell after that decline, you've done relatively well. Or if you can buy twice as many pickups for the same amount of acres. And that's what history holds up very well for. Now, get back to the... Here is what happened with soybeans and gold. That's last year. This is right out of the meeting. And soybeans and gold. This is what's happened with wheat last year and wheat. Now, wheat's got some life coming. It has been coming to life somewhat as of late overall. And we'll look at some of these a little bit later more specifically. But I want you to look at this. This peak that we had last year. Now, this is not last year's, but this is the pattern I watched for, is markets that went on this parabolic rise. Anybody in here fly airplanes? Any pilots? How long can you keep that parabolic rise up? Not long, unless you've got something, you know, unless you're into an Air Force jet, and even that won't keep going if you get high enough or out of fuel. Well, that pattern in markets has one of the easiest patterns to know what's likely to follow, and that is meltdown. I said last year that from a probability standpoint, all of the markets I've studied that have got a parabolic curve like that, major moves that meet equal a manic or grand mania. I didn't use the term grand mania last year, but a mania is something that's gone 300 or 400% of its lows. Grand mania is 8 to 12 times its lows or more. Have come down at least 75% of what they went up. All the markets I have studied except one have done that. And of course, I didn't go back that far. I only went back to 1600. Which brings a point. The gentleman over here talked about in recessions, food demand goes up. That is correct historically, but price doesn't always go with it. The demand goes up. One of the best lessons in supply and demand was 1977 to 1980 for me, when we saw corn go from around figures of $2 to just about $4 on the futures, and every year for 3 years running, the carryover got bigger. So, let's go on with this pattern. What follows this mark, this up move, tends to be a crash. That's the acute meltdown. Whether we're done with the acute meltdown or not yet, I don't know. Overall, the acute meltdown may very well last into 2010. But following this, the bear phase, you're going to see why the next year, wherever this acute phase breaks, or the next year, even after the crash, has a lot of different personalities. Notice this one was not a lot of rebound. This is one of the more dramatic bull market peaks, 1980 gold, break down. The next rebound was pretty sharp. Came back about 5/8 of what it went down. This one, sugar, the year after the crash, it had a, they call that a dead cat bounce, but they better make sure the cat's frozen so he bounces that much. Notice that we finally did get a major corrective rally 6 years later. So if you're holding corn from last year, to sell, you might have a wait. Here's a flip side. This is an unusual extreme. Major peak in lumber, and then we tested, and finally have the bear market over here. Except one problem here. This was in an inflationary period that held it up. We're now in a deflationary period, In fact, lumber, you could argue, forecast that. Soybeans, which none of you care much about, but I do. Notice the peaks, the spike peaks have a personality, and that is to come down for 18 months to 3 years after the spike peaks. The bounces off them can be all over the place. Corn came down, went into a kind of a plateau, and then came down again, or just came crashing down. Looking at a little bit more corn, here's 1996, came crashing down, and there's your corrective rally. The one perception or misperception that I find that people that don't study markets have is after a year like last year, that, oh, we got to get some big bounces after all. You know, last year set some values. If there is a pattern, is that the bounces after a manic peak and crash are smaller rather than larger in terms of typical. That was a thrilling statement, or thrilling. That was well received. I can only tell you the truth. Here's wheat. Great study of contrast. Break, big bounce. Break, kept right up with sugar. In other words, not much. So there is no one pattern for next year. Crude oil for 2009, that is. Here's this. Not much. Oats, same idea. So now you get the idea is that what we get in the next year is pretty tough to figure out. But the one thing is with all due respect, they got to beat the grain out of your hands. More grain has moved on low prices, falling prices, than on rising prices. Now, I was actually afraid of having to come here today and not being able to be confident to give you any hope that we're going to get a bounce of size. Because if we were in a normal economy, I would be expecting a bounce to be starting right about now. Actually, next week, and it looks like it might be starting a little early. We have something else into the mix when it comes to corn, and this is really one of the aces in the hole. I have a cycle low due. The next 5.5-year cycle in corn is due to bottom next year. If I had to pick right now, third Tuesday, August 2010, 1220, 1240, and that's Illinois time. But that's a crude estimate. Notice, however, I've marked in pink the years after the cycle highs. This is where the high was very late in the cycle, year after the cycle high, down. Here it is a choppy sideways. Here is a down. Here's a just an ugly choppy sideways. Another one, choppy sideways. This is the one atypical where we had the high very late. You don't have another picture of it now because we haven't done 2009 yet. We are most, in terms of cyclical patterns, we are most like 1996 and 1974 in terms of the behavior that this is the kind of year that we are likely to get in corn. In other words, choppy, some up. I don't know what time of the year it's going to be, but the alternative outcome is high early, low late. Now, if this was 2010, if I could have anything to do with the scheduling, can we do this the first week of January in 2010? Because if I know nothing more than I do today for 2010, I'd be selling the first week of January 2010. Because that year is the cycle year in corn has a very reliable personality. It's very, very similar to if you've ever watched the pictures of them diving off the cliffs in Acapulco. That's the kind of way corn prices tend to act in the cycle year, 2010. So I do expect that we'll be down a couple of years. But that's just the beginning of the problem. Can somebody tell me how long I get to go or what time we end? What? Sure. I just need to know what track to stay on. There's far more things I want to tell you than I have time for. This is the cycle of man. It's part of the report I'm working on. Here's a very short version of it. The cycle of man, since the time that Adam and Eve were thrown out of the garden, or if you don't believe that happened, since they became aware of needing food, Survival is focused on shelter, food, and water, which also early man had one great advantage over the rest of us. He had adventure in his life that we didn't have. Now, he didn't realize it was a benefit that he would miss it later in life, but when he went to looking for food, the issue was he going to find food or be food? Anyway, if you watch sparrows and stuff feed on the ground in the wintertime, you'd understand what early man's life was like in terms of looking for food. Security phase, and you're going to see these again a little bit later, security phase is where it's basically the most stable times. And as we come out of the times where we come out of survival and suddenly we're able to, or we finally reach a point where we can save up for the future, but we remember what it's like to be in survival. Then we go through the power phase where man focuses on his wants. His basics are not in doubt. I don't need no stinking God. I am God. It's a time of excesses, and then when it ends, it's, oh God, I can't help myself. Now, you're going to see this pattern again a little bit later. In this is an extension of the cycle of man. It's the perceived value, how it expresses itself. In the survival phase, people become risk averse, which is really incredible if you think about it. When people have nothing to lose, they won't risk it. Hoarding is common. My grandmother, who was an adult in the Depression, but earlier years, her father used to ride out on a horse to look for work. If he came home, if he got work, they ate. But she actually went entire weeks as a child without food. And she hoarded things the rest of her life. Even when my grandfather and his family did extremely well, she never was safe in her mind, in her heart. Hoarding and laws are obstacles. And what they mean by that is, if my family's starving, I can steal something. They're obstacles to a well-intended outcome, positive expectation. Security phase, we're risk aware, we remember the risk, but we get involved in storing and sharing. It's where stewardship becomes very strong. And laws provide structure. They protect my supply from you stealing it. Provide structure in the system. At the power phase, people become risk-seeking. So when they jump off the bridge with the bungee cord without checking to see if it's tied on. Which is what I think we saw some of that in recent years. Speculation. It's a time of grand speculation. And those who are in power are above the law. Madoff and others like that. Congress. I'm all for congressional hearings to find out who did this or who's behind this, as long as they're sitting in front of mirrors. That's who I'd like to see them examine first. We are terribly devoid of leadership right now, and I don't mean at the political level, leadership at home in the country. We fix this from the grassroots, not from the top down, by stepping up and taking care of ourselves again. And that's what history says where we're headed. Now, here's the grand speculative rotation. This speculative rotation got its start in the 1890s, got a second start in the 1930s. So we're talking about having gotten out to where the speculative rotation, the speculative phase of man, we had the great speculation in commodities in the 70s to 1980. We had it in bond yields to 1979 to 82, 84, stocks from the 1990s to 2000, real estate 2003 to 06, and then we had the grand finale where everything went together. Yes, some real estate prices say in some of the spec residential areas have gone down, but did you watch the building boom continue throughout the country? The developments that were going on? That was a continuing speculation, and this is the grand finale, kind of like that 4th of July fireworks show where, you know, you got that, you know, when the commodities went into 1980, go boom, boy, that's a loud one, you know, and we had the, you know, stocks in 2000, oh, that's a big pretty one, and then now we have the grand finality when we have them all together. And then the rotation goes to cash. Cash is king. Statement I believe I shared last year. Cash is King, 2008 dash to how long? The other question is what represents cash today? What represents cash? Is it gold or is it currency? The answer is yes. Which one will it be? Historically, if you go back, now I don't go back that far. I go back to a time, I remember I was reading the other day about a time when they were talking about taxing the rich and they were eating up the middle class, and that was 1784 B.C. Mesopotamia. And again, in the time of the Romans, we're doing the same things they did. It worked really well for them, too. The problem is, what's going to be cash? If gold were still being traded, had still been used as a common currency someplace in the world, in a major area in recent decades, it might be an alternative. But anytime you interrupt a cycle, interrupt a behavior, even interrupt a tradition, whether it be religious or a cultural tradition, for three generations, you forget it. All they are is stories. You forget how to do it, having been part of your life. So one of the reasons the dollar, I believe, has been so stinking strong is, what other alternative is there? You've got some people that are chasing the gold, but I believe gold is a unique right now, unique in the sense that it was a speculative rotation. I think the smart money is the ones that have already had gold, and they've been advertising it to you. Buy gold. How are you going to protect your assets? Buy gold. We will sell it to you. Now, I'm not saying that gold isn't a hedge. It is a hedge, like an insurance policy is a hedge. A small percentage of a person's net worth in gold is not the worst thing in the world, just in case we go into total anarchy, just in case the currency system collapses. That's never going to happen. It's just every economic expansion of 90 to 150 years has ended with a currency crisis, with a currency collapse, even when it was gold. Gold has always continued to hold value, but there's been a lot of disagreement in the value. Might buy 5 head of cattle or it might buy 20 head of cattle, depending upon the region you go to. You lose the standard for a time. We may be fortunate if we survive this without a currency crisis of that extent, and I believe we have a good shot to do it. I was behind the bailout in philosophy because we have to keep the banking system alive. The mistake that was made in the 1930s was we allowed the banking system to have a heart attack. The banking system is what keeps the blood flowing through the economy. It's like your heart. Now, the specifics of the bailout, I knew everything was going to be downhill from there. Just when man gets involved. Because the fastest way to fix this, you aren't going to like the outcome. And that would be to have done nothing. The problem is history says it would be anarchy of some form. It would be anarchy of some form. If it's bloodless, that'd be great. So that's the risk. That's the worst case scenario. Now, I am not prone to giving these kind of off-the-wall type things as a rule. Now, here's the current almost up-to-date chart of gold. Actually, it's down a little bit more today. Where's April gold at last? 894. So we're down right in here. That's not a good sign after last month. Last year, I had a 90% probability that we would not go to a new high within 5 months, and 80% probability we would not go to a new high within a year. Right now, I'm at 80% probability that we have the high for the year in. If that's the case, I believe that you've had a market that's come down, broken, come back up to retest, and then I have a cycle low in the CRB due in the summer fall of 2010, and it's logical that gold will probably be down with it. On a short-term basis, since a lot of money rushed to gold for safety, I could actually see a break in gold have a short-term positive effect on other markets. Some of the fear comes out of the market. Some of the markets thaw out a little bit. Especially if the dollar were to break. The problem is, well, I'll get to the problem in a moment. I want you to take a look at this. Earlier, I showed you a bunch of markets running together. I also want to make clear the point that gold doesn't literally lead the grains and oil seeds or other commodities, but there's a 91% correlation, meaning 91% of the time over the long haul, the direction of the gold will forecast the direction of most commodities. Meats, not necessarily. If you look at a picture like this, if this is what's been going on, realistic, and the bottom chart slightly leads the top one in this picture, if this were to continue down, what would we expect of the top chart? To continue down. Here's another set of charts, just to show you that sometimes they mirror each other. And again, this one has the bottom chart sometimes slightly leading the top, not always. On this one, if this continues up, we'd expect the top one to continue down, right? But they're the same market. So you have to be careful about jumping to conclusions about whether one market's leading another or not. I believe that what gold shows us is how it's responding to long-term economic issues or trends, whatever you want to call it, with the last few months being fear-driven speculation, most likely. In other words, at 9% of the time where it hasn't probably hasn't really been leading us. But that gold drives or responds more quickly to economic issues than things like grains, the corn and soybeans do. But they all end up responding to the same one. Since the dollar was allowed to float back in the early 70s, it has been the only indicator I have found that has had a 100% reliability on forecasting the long-term direction of corn and other commodities. And notice, it's not based upon a literal pattern, but rather on a swing pattern. So low here, corn, dollar rallied, corn broke. Dollar broke, corn ended up rallying. And it used to precede turns in corn by about 10 to 18 months. Used to. A lot of things changed with the dynamics in the late 1990s. Here's where I'd run this chart in a newsletter in early 2002, looking at a downturn in the dollar, looking for an upturn in corn. Here's the rest of the story. There was a downturn in the dollar. There was the labored upturn in corn. Dollar bounced. Corn had another break. Dollar renewed the downtrend. Corn had a much bigger rally. And now I show a major bottom in the dollar that is only, so far from a technical standpoint, the birth of the strongest bull market I've ever seen. Now, that's kind of a scary thought. Because if this kind of decline in the dollar, which was round figures a 40% decline in the value of the dollar index, triggered this kind of inflation, what would a 50% appreciation in the dollar bring in terms of deflation? That isn't what should scare you. If we have this rotation of capital that chases a dollar on a speculative basis, we have seen a number of markets run up 3 and 4 times their low. 4 times their low is common. Round figures, corn, $2 to $8. Wheat, Minneapolis, $2.50 to $25. Let's see, that's four. That's 10 times. Crude oil went to a grand mania. A little over 12 times its lows. Oh, there's one other one. The Dow, from its major low, the Grand Mania came about less than 100 points short of being 25 times its lows. So the fact that we're coming down the Dow the way we are is not a surprise. So what happens if we have a bull market started in the dollar index that doesn't appreciate by 50%, but rather, let's say it goes 4 times its lows to $280 index? 4 times, can you say $1 corn and have it be valuable? Now, you think I'm insane? I probably am on that. But I want you to be aware of what can happen. That's why I said relative value on your properties. You don't think this can happen? How many of you believe because all the money we're printing, we got to inflate? How many have been told that? Asian Bank, headquartered out of Singapore, did a study last year that showed that the world stock markets, bond, and currencies valuations lost $50 trillion in equity. And that doesn't count this year's losses. $50 trillion in value. So we're throwing $1 to $3 trillion at it. That really is going to cause inflation. We are deflating until history proves otherwise. We have about a 10% chance that we hyperinflate. We have about a 10% chance that we hyperinflate. We have about a 90% chance that we deflate. I'm not giving you an opinion. This is all based upon historicals. The question is how severe is the deflation? What we are undoing is a 50-year expansion of credit. We have done this before. One of the problems that the Mesopotamians had was credit problems in the 1780 BC. And many other societies since then. Our personal indebtedness of the last data I saw was about double per unit of GDP as it was in about 1929. In other words, we've really leveraged out. And once a credit contraction gets rolling, savings rates keep growing and growing and growing and growing. That trend change is likely to be very severe. When you get a trend change like that, that means you're taking even more money out of the economy. Last year when the rebate checks went, what was one of the complaints? Well, people didn't spend them. Well, they want to encourage use of more credit and more spending and put us right back in the same fix we were in. It's what got us here. You know, the banker made the point, and some of the others made the point about the great position that agriculture is in when it comes to debt loads, et cetera, especially against real estate value or the assets. How do you think this country would be if the average consumer had done it that way? We wouldn't be in this mess, would we? Behaviors change. Now, the dollar index has been battling a key barrier for me. 87.35. I believe the rally we had last fall was a jab. We've already had consecutive higher weekly closes above it. It tells me we're likely to go higher. A retest of 87.35 on the cash dollar index would be okay. If we end this week below 87.35, I would agree about the concept that maybe a big correction could come, like a swing down, swing up, and a swing back down, maybe into the low 80s. That's no problem. But for me, the long-term trend has turned up. The long-term pattern is turned, but the key is if the dollar index gets into the 92 area or not. If it gets to 92 and goes no higher, it may be a corrective rally. That may allow us to see deflation ease or prices rebound. If the dollar index gets out above 92, the pattern tells me we're going to blow this high. How long will it take? I don't know. But the pattern tells me that if we get above 92 and stay above it, we'll blow that high. Well, that's all-time high at 120 and change. No, it's not. Dollar index is already back over here in 84, I believe it was. We were around 164. If you realize we've already been to 164 once before and the dollar index is something, well, tripling the load puts you at 210. Is that crazy? Can't happen? Don't tell me it can't happen. Tell me it won't happen. You're welcome to your opinion or your belief or even your research. But in 2009, I'll give you a perspective. I can envision soybeans at $14. The question is how many bushels it takes. I can also see soybeans in 2009 at $4.98 to $5.08. I don't know which it'll be. It might be both. Now, I was hoping that the corn market and the bean market, and bean doesn't run this cycle. Corn and wheat runs this cycle. There's cycle low due in wheat and corn next week. Last week was the earliest I could have had it, and maybe it's there. If that's the case, had we come down, this is the in a normal market, if deflation doesn't get going, if the dollar doesn't blow up to 92 in a hurry, We could swing back up and test the 450, 460 area. Here's a different perspective. This is the optimistic one. The other one was December 09 contract only. This is December corn continuation chart, meaning this is where 08 expired. Swing up, swing down, swing up. Those that go through my market mastery workshop, understand that we put a real emphasis on that, like 97% of all moves in the markets unfold in a minimum of three primary swings. So we've got a good shot at getting swing up, swing down, and a swing up. Now, how high will this be? Will it be abortive, like it was over there, not being able to take out that high? I don't know. Only the market can tell me. I do expect an early high this year as if normal unfolds. Means sometime during April or early May looks like the best candidate. Because this next 34-week cycle low after the one done now will be about Thanksgiving. Here's wheat. Again, the same thing. The pessimistic would be back to match the highs in a normal year. I don't know if we're strong enough to be a normal year, but that's where we would go, back to 650 on the July, maybe back to 730 if we have an optimistic bounce. Here's soybeans. I do not have the same cycle in beans. I don't have anything except pattern. Swing up, swing down. We're in great shape, and I believe it was Dan that mentioned this morning that if we get above 854.5 or something like that, I agree, above 855 on a close, I could see November beans as high as 1045. Shoot, I could see them back up into this area, 14 and change. I can see them there. I wouldn't bet on it this year. Remember, we're coming off of a manic peak. The bounces tend to be smaller than bigger. But those charts that are in your handout shows the number of different ways we can follow that manic peak with what kind of garbage you get. So I don't know what we'll get. And so I said, last year was easy. This year, I just respond as it unfolds. Now, I don't have a chart up here of soybean meal, but I have a cycle low, a 47-week cycle low due during the month of June, which tells me we probably aren't going to rally into June. Probably going to get an earlier high. I also have a 6-year turn or a 72-month turn, same thing, due in July or August. If we're down into that time, since meal's been trading, which would be around 1950, which is not enough history to be that reliable, but since we've been trading meal futures, meal, when it makes the 72-month turn as a low, 1 year later, corn makes a cycle low. So if we get a low in meal this fall or this late summer and fall, then I look for corn to bottom a year later. Now, here's a quick update of the daily picture of November beans, and there's the 854.5 he was talking about. That's called a reaction high of a daily downtrend. If we break that, we head north in all probability. Now, you do not want corn, beans, or wheat now to post weekly closes below the lows we've already posted in March, not after today's action. Be a slim chance it's a jab on the corn and the wheat, but the odds aren't in your favor. Also, you need to understand that the stock market is a key factor in what's going on here. Now, the stock market doesn't usually lead anything, but it is a key factor, and it's psychologically important right now. And this is on page 4 of the newsletter that came in your blue bag is this chart. But this is a picture of the Dow. It's a picture of the Dow, and these are what I call eighth points. Don't worry about that. This is 50% of the 25-year range. This is 62% of the 25-year range, and that's 75% of the 25-year range. And since every bull market that's been manic or grand mania has come down 75% or more of what has gone up, every one but one, since 1600, I still have to expect the Dow to finish this break no higher than just below 4,000. When? Could be as late as 2022. Could be as early as, I suppose, this year, but more likely next year. If we get a bounce in the stock market right now, this area comes up through here from about 7380 to 7410. That's the key barrier. That's the battle zone for anything for a major rally beyond that. Otherwise, we could spend the entire year hovering between upper fives and low sevens before going down. Now, there's one more of these charts I'd like you to see. Two more of these. Anybody in here do any technical work? Any technical work at all? You recognize this pattern, anybody? An outside bar reversal down? Not just a reversal bar, but an outside bar reversal down. A reversal bar where you don't encompass the entire previous month's range or previous week's range or previous day's range, it has to have follow-through action to be statistically valid. Otherwise, it's about 50-50 of being significant. An outside bar by itself is about 80% valid by itself. And depending upon the size of the bar, it gets even higher. That's a 90% probability that that bar won't be cleared in less than 5 bars. 80% probability won't be cleared in less than 10 to 15 bars. That's a yearly reversal in the CRB index. And for those that are calling for crude oil to come back to life anytime soon, that's a yearly reversal in crude oil. Probability standpoint, 10% max that we're going to blow these highs anytime soon. That means a couple of decades. That 10% probability, however, is what's called catastrophic risk. Let me explain catastrophic risk in very simple terms. How seriously is that risk that they actually collapse the currency and we have that hyperinflation? Or that we go to $1 corn, by the way, on the other extreme. That, a catastrophic risk, if you went out, every time you went out to drive, 1 in 10 times you'd have a major car accident. How much would you respect 10% risk? Those of you who have daughters, of which I have 2, if every 10 times they went out on a date, one time they came home while you became a grandparent, how much would you respect catastrophic risk? Dave, having had 2 daughters, I found that letting the boys know that my marksmanship skills were up here really served well.
I got guns and know how to use them.
Yep. One boyfriend came in and said, I got a bigger gun than you, and I said, I'm a better shot. Never saw him again. All I was ever hoping was that they never ended up found in a ditch someplace with a bullet hole in them. All right. This is the pattern I showed you before. This is survival, security, speculation, survival. Need to understand something about the parameters of these. The move from survival to speculation historically has taken about three generations. Through speculation, by the way, about 3 generations. The move from speculation to survival can occur as fast as 18 to 36 months. I've seen some take a lot longer than that, but it can happen that fast. The survival phase tends to be measured in decades. We've got some 150-year expansions that led to survival phases that lasted longer. This isn't all bad. Cash becomes king. If you're strong in cash, you've got opportunities coming to you, but don't rush. Don't rush. But cash will be a great place to be. One of the things I'm worried about is the fact that if the entire advance from 1896 is done to here, do we retrace that 75%? If that's the case, you go back to the 1930s values, and that, unfortunately, could be in hard numbers. Now, some of you in here, I'm just old enough to remember because my dad was sick, had severe diabetes from age 25, and I was active in farming as a young adult, call that age 14. And I remember buying feed for a sow herd, and we never paid over $1 a bushel for anything. So can any of you remember that it isn't that long ago that we had $1 corn? You can't do that, can we? Well, if the dollar index were to hyperinflate the dollar index, prices would hyperdeflate. Here's my best guess if deflation follows a normal track. And believe me, they are trying to minimize the impact of deflation. They are not trying for a soft landing, obviously, in the economy. They're not even trying for a hard landing. They'd love to trade places with the guy that put the plane down in the harbor. Because, again, anybody that's a pilot in here knows any landing we can walk away from is a good landing. Yeah. We're trying to keep the system from collapsing. And I think there's a fair chance we'll get it done. But it doesn't mean that it's going to be easy. And it also, I think our kids are going to learn lessons that our grandparents learned. Remember what Grandpa said? If you can't pay for it with cash, don't buy it. That's the behavior it's likely. Here's my educated guess as a general price pattern for economy, markets, commodities. This is just an educated conjecture, and that's all it is. Bounced into 2012 to as late as 2014. Back down into 2016, something like 2014 to 17. I have cycles coming together in a convergence even greater than I saw in the mid-80s. And we all remember that was a wonderful time in agriculture. It was a wonderful time to buy when many were selling, right? Now, the good news is the agricultural cycles aren't quite as intensely converging right there. The bad news is the general economic cycles I have are. So, yes, I think agriculture will do relatively better. And then we finish up, if all goes well, in 2022, somewhere either, I would guess right now, in August or October of 2022, the next bull market in equities will try to start. Now, there will probably be some pretty big rallies in the stock market because you have seen plenty of times where patterns where the actual low price in a bear phase, it could be over here. It can be over here. It can even be over here. And then you just stay this way. You struggle along for a long time before you start up again. None of this is opinion, guys. None of this is fact either. All I've done is forward projected the history I've studied. All I know is it served me well for a very long time. And will continue to, I hope. I'm always, always, always on watch for what can go wrong. And there is a lot that can probably go wrong in life and in the marketplace. Oh, one of the things that one of the gentlemen up here made mention of that does worry me. Cyclically, we're at a time for where nationalism is likely to intensify, where countries are more worried about themselves. I am more than willing to give Barack Obama a chance. So far, he's used up most of it. If he would still turn the corner, I don't care what most of the policies he tries to do, if he would actually stand up to Congress like he said he would and stop the earmark crap, that'd be a start. Now, but I am more worried about the way he's already acting internationally and where he's treating foreign leaders. It acts like nationalism. So, now, with that, about all I have left is interest rates. Historically, this run that we've had in bonds, that's not your mania, guys. I talked to you earlier. We had the mania already in bond yields. Historical, your patterns in bonds, the behavior pattern is to go have yields spike and act like other prices do, with it, you know, following with a meltdown, bounce, and then long bear market and yields. Bottoms in yields don't V very often. They come down, they flatten out, and in history they can bottom. They typically stay near the bottoms for a minimum, near the bottom for a minimum of 2 to 3 years, sometimes for decades. So I don't expect a big recovery in yields. In fact, I have a low due in the bond market next week, if we break into it, that is. God forbid if we spike up into it. But I have a low due in the bond market next week, so I'll be watching that. I happen to be attention deficit disorder. I had one more thought I wanted to throw out there that went past me. So if anybody gets hit by it, I apologize. But I don't think, I don't really expect a V bottom in yields at all. Oh, yes, here's the other thought. The one major risk to rising rates that I see based upon deflationary history is if people and countries need to liquidate bonds because they need the cash. If they need to pull the money out of bonds because they need the cash, just like from 1930 to 32, there was a spike in interest rates when people had to liquidate the bonds because they needed the cash. That's your risk. So I don't see bond yields spiking on inflation, but rather if deflation becomes ultra-severe. I'm talking about long-term. I'm not talking about day-to-day or week-to-week swings, guys. So that's my story, and I know a lot about my opinion. I know I don't know how this year will unfold, but I know that I have a good idea where we're headed into 2010, and then we'll see what we do with that. And that is to work our way lower overall. Questions? Good Lord. Okay. I got a 30% return on my cash last year in my retirement plan. I put it in cash and didn't buy any stocks. I can buy 30% more this year. Sometimes you don't need a yield. Truthfully, sometimes you don't need yields. We're right now going into that security phase where people survival phase where people will focus on protecting their equity, not on earnings. How do you explain the ultra low yields on money markets for some people? The Japanese have been trying to stimulate their economy for 15 years. And they've gone nowhere, and their savings rate has continued to climb and climb and climb and climb. Cash is king, so just sit on cash. I don't care. You know what, though? Coffee. Go to a supermarket, buy your coffee, open the cans, dump it out, put the money in the can. That's beyond the FDIC insured, that is. Now, if you are going to bury it, don't get the plastic cans unless you put some currency in there. In case you forget to where you buried them, you got to be able to find them with a metal detector. I'm not afraid of putting my money into something that's FDIC insured. I am not, because if that goes away, we've got a problem. Big one. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. They aren't. They aren't going to figure out the budgets. The entitlement programs and more government, what's going to happen? Historically, this is going to extend the recovery. It's going to extend the time it takes to recover, because you can, politically, through government, insure survival, but you cannot insure, I call it, thrival. You will not thrive under that. My best experience with entitlements was this. When I was on the farm in western South Dakota, we had rattlesnakes, and a lot of them. And why do you suppose we had rattlesnakes? We had grain. When you have grain, you have mice. The rattlesnakes came in. What do you do about that? Cats. Lots of cats. We never had any rattlesnakes the last handful of years I was on the farm. The problem is we started having like 20 cats, and it became 30, and at the peak we counted 72 cats. We had to feed them every day to keep them around. The problem is you had about 30 of the cats that never left the feeding area. They didn't go hunt. They just sat there and kept complaining when you came out. Where's my check? I mean my food. We discouraged the will to work, to survive. So all I know is what history says, and what history says is the road we're going down isn't a good one politically. Your best hope as far as that goes, and I don't care what party it is, I'd like to throw them all out and start over. Your best hope is that the next two elections should be repudiation elections in terms of patterns. That means the incumbents will have a higher percentage of losses, which means from 1% to 2%, probably. Let's get them cleaned up. Any more questions? Well, what worries me is the statements he said about rich agribusiness. If you don't think there's a chance at dollar corn, what happens if they pull the farm program supports? I don't know that it will happen. All I know is from a chart standpoint and from a historical pattern standpoint, I can make a case for $1 corn on the third Tuesday in August in 2016, 1220 to 1240 Illinois time. What's that? Plan to buy land then. The land deteriorations. When land is appreciated 1,000% in history, it will typically have a 50% or more retracement. That's happened four times using San Diego real estate as an example. All four times they've declined at least 50%. They've had a fifth time. Now we're just waiting to have it happen again. The two patterns you talked about, Todd, about how long it took from 1981 to 87 and from 1921, I believe, or 20. Most commodity prices peaked in the early 20s, not in the late 20s, and not bottoming until in the 1930s. The land peak in the 1860s didn't bottom until the 1890s. Everything's faster now. Don't be so sure. We've got the biggest level of indebtedness to pay off. We've mortgaged our future. I'm not talking about government debt. I'm talking about our debt. We, the people, on average, as consumers. And if agriculture is in such good shape, that means how much worse are the rest of us? I will repeat that question. It's a great question. It's a great point to remind me of from history. What happens if the government decides the farmers are the rich people and they start taxing the land to the nth degree? In the 1930s, about 2% of property owners held mortgages. And yet a lot of property owners lost their real estate because they couldn't pay the taxes. I hope we survive long enough economically to get some people to say these policies have got to change. Again, and it isn't just this new administration. It's the behavior of the power class who's above the law. Our forefathers did a wonderful job of setting us up as a democratic republic so that we had, because if the masses were going to do it, the democracies wouldn't last cyclically. Democratic republic might. The problem is they never could foresee this kind of election cycles being so rapid. I would say that we really need a major overhaul in the terms. I'd go for like 1 6-year term for a president, 1 8-year term for a senator, 1 or 2 terms for a congressman, and, you know, max it out. Because a professional politician is an oxymoron. It wasn't the way it was. When this country was developed, what was a politician? What was a government, somebody that was a president or a congressman? They were business people from various walks of life, and they were, when they went to Congress, they did what? They served their terms. I don't know how to fix it, but I do know that when we don't follow the rule of Jubilee and correct the credit thing historically, after about 5 decades, the system does it to itself. And guys, credit was a problem back 1,500 to almost 2,000 years B.C. already. So this is nothing new. Over and over again. Now, it's time of great opportunity. We don't want to panic. We don't want to panic. Great opportunities are coming. But the best thing that protects you is if you are debt-free, you are protected against hyperdeflation and you're protected against hyperinflation. Because if you have hyperinflation, the 10% outcome, your asset values will appreciate. If we have hyperdeflation, it's paying off debt taken at inflated levels with, you know, dollar corn doesn't pay a lot of $10,000 land off. Oh, by the way, I wouldn't do this, and no offense to the bankers, but I wouldn't trust a banker that would loan me, make me a real estate loan if I put 50% down. Because if land historically has had a 50% retracement, if land values fall in half, who's got 100% coverage? The bank does. How much equity do you have left? Zero. Cash purchase or extremely highly leveraged, so they're in it with you. Those are your two strategies. Hey, one point. I came out of agriculture, an agricultural background. I was in business for myself, and then I spent 10 years at the parent company of ProFarmer. And I did it because I had a son that had brain surgery at 10 months of age. I needed health insurance till he was 12. We got health insurance, I left. It's the only time I've had a job in my life. But what I learned the difference from being there and learned in that time was, from me feeling like I was always answering to the bank or answering to the others, I came out after that and I said, I'm going to my business for myself. And I went and interviewed bankers. I say, you want to be on my team? I went to attorneys. You want to be on my team? I went to accountants. You want to be on my team? They work for me. But we have almost a partnership going. That's the way I like to trust my banker. Not up here, not down here, but across the table as an equal. That way both are pulling in the same general direction. He's watching out for his interests. You're watching out for yours. How can you work together? That's what I suggest you do. There's plenty of opportunities out there. Just don't credit yourself away, because that's just going to be a problem for a long time to come.